All right, let's see. I need a designated reader. Does anybody volunteer? Ron, thank you. Way to go, Ron. I'll tell you, it's nice to have Ron Combs in here because, boy, that hand comes up just as quick as can be. All right, let's go to our lesson today, love and the law. How many of y'all are for love? How many of y'all are for law? How many of you for both? And I've got to ask the question, how many of y'all for neither? All right. Let's go to Romans 13, verses 8 through 10. A passage that Seventh-day Adventists have always been a little defensive on because they have a lot of explaining to do with this text. All right, hit it.
Verse 8. Pay as you go to avoid all debts, except the debt of loving one another. He who loves his neighbor is in harmony with God's law. God's law says, don't commit adultery, don't kill, don't steal, and don't be jealous. These and the other commandments, which I don't need to list for you, can all be summarized in one statement. Love your neighbor as you love yourself. Love, verse 10. Love doesn't do things to hurt others. That's why love fulfills all the requirements of God's law.
Okay. Now, what passage do we have to kind of get defensive on in the great theological aspect of religion?
Verse 9.
Well, how come? All right. How about verse 10 that says love fulfills the law? Okay. What is Paul trying to say here? First of all, you have to understand the way that Paul writes. One, he always starts out every book with a nice greeting. And then he moves in to the substance of whatever he wants to get across in the body of the book. And then at the end of the book, he always gives some very practical advice. And so we can go to Galatians, Ephesians, whatever book we want, and we'll always see this pattern. First is a good greeting, very warm, makes something very personable. And then he gets into the context of what he wants the letter to be. Then he ends up with some very good advice. So as we get to Romans 13, he's about to summarize everything. And so he says, after all talking about law, he says, I want to summarize to you what fulfilling the law is, and it is loving your neighbor as yourself. Now, who would like to put that into English so that we all can understand exactly what do you think that Paul is saying? Anybody?
I don't think that... maybe I'm speaking in general, but I don't think any of us can do that.
Okay.
I think that only the Christ that lives in us can do that in us.
Okay.
Through us.
All right.
It's Christ in us.
Right. So you're saying that none of us can do that.
Well, let me change that.
Okay.
I tried that for a long time.
Okay.
It was fake.
Okay.
I couldn't do it. I realized I couldn't do it.
Okay.
But I realized that he could.
All right. I appreciate that point. Who has a quarterly that has Sunday in it? Look up Sunday in your quarterly. Raise your hand when you get there. Okay, Eloise, read the second paragraph on the comments on Sunday's lesson. Nice and loud. Oh, wrong one. Whoa, wow, that's good.
This Sunday or last
Sunday? This Sunday for this lesson. Last Sunday for this lesson. Oh, I like forward-looking people. Okay.
For starters, faith is not a substitute for obedience, as if faith somehow nullifies our obligation to obey the law, the Lord. The moral precepts are still in force. They are explained, even amplified in the New Testament. And no indication is given either that it will be easy for the Christians to no indication is given either that it will be easy for Christians to regulate his or her life by these moral precepts. On the contrary, we're told that at times it could be difficult, for the battle with self and sin is always hard. Christians are promised divine power and given assurance that victory is possible. But we are still in the world of the enemy, and we'll have to fight many battles against temptation. The good news is that if we fall, if we stumble, we are not cast away, but have a high priest who intercedes in our behalf.
Okay. That's not what I want.
That was the second paragraph.
I understand. Sometimes second paragraph to me is a different paragraph.
Down below?
No.
I don't, in that paragraph, just my own thought.
Oh, well.
I don't appreciate this fighting business because I think it's a more of a submitting business.
Okay.
We submit to his love.
There's a paragraph in the lesson that says this. Number one, the law is important because it points out sin. Number two, as we look at the law, we want to keep the law. Number three, when we look at the law and we cannot keep it, then we must decide that we need another power to help us keep the law, which is what this young lady is saying. So, in the logic is, number one, the law points out sin. Number two, as we look and want to keep the law, we realize we can't. And then number three is that we must look for a higher power to help us. Now, in that statement, what is the focus?
The law.
The law. I would like to give an alternative to that. Now, let's go back to what Paul says. He says, I'm going to sum up the law in one sentence. Love your neighbor as yourself. Now, go to John 13, verse 34 and 35. And let's see what Jesus says about this statement. Love yourself, love your neighbor as yourself. Okay. Yeah, John 13, 34 and 35.
Before I go, I want to tell you to love one another. Genuine love means to love each other the same way I have loved you. People will know that you are my disciples by how much you love one another.
Okay. How do you know if you're a disciple of Christ? How does the world know that you are a follower of Christ? What is the significant trait that Jesus says that you know? Pardon? What does that mean? Because I thought that we're known as followers of Christ if we do certain things, observe certain things, and we follow Christ on doing things, that we're a follower of Christ. Where does Christ come along? As well as Paul saying, hey, let me give you a new commandment. That's what Jesus said. If you love one another, you're a disciple of mine. How do we fit that into our theology?
There's an illustration that I heard one time I thought was really neat. It was, the law is like a mirror.
Okay.
You look into the mirror,
and you see that your face is dirty, but the mirror can't do anything about your condition.
Mm-hmm.
So you turn from the mirror that can't wash your face to Christ who can.
Okay. All right. I like that.
I don't know about the rest of you folks, but I felt pretty good this morning knowing that I helped contribute a part of that $500 to a total stranger that I don't know that appreciated it so very
yes.
much. I felt better about that than I did actually just driving to church, sitting in a pew, singing a few songs, and having some prayer and playing church.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that's
okay. All right. Anybody else comment? Yes.
Ernie, the lost don't know or care about laws that we keep. What they care about is the love that we show.
Okay. Absolutely. I believe that 100%. Anybody else like to comment?
Ernie.
Yes.
You know, Christ told us when He comes in the kingdom that He will separate.
Yeah. We're going to come to that, so hold that thought. Very good. Never get a hit. By the way, I heard the definition of what a great sermon is. A great opening, a great close, and they're very close together. I kind of like that. We're going to come to that. Yes?
Jesus sets the standard for loving one another even as I have loved you.
Yes. All right. Now, let's take Jesus' relationship with His disciples, because His command is that we love one another as He loved His disciples. First of all, did the disciples understand who He was?
No.
Absolutely not. Did the disciples take good care of Jesus during His 3 years of ministry? Absolutely not. Were they selfish? Absolutely. They were looking for what's in it for us. The day before He was crucified, they were talking about who's going to be number one in the kingdom and who's going to be able to sit on the right-hand side and the left-hand side. And they also went and got their mother to come to talk to Jesus about it. And then in His greatest hour of needing help, when He went to the Garden of Gethsemane, He took His three best friends, the ones most closest to Him, and said, "Will you watch with me and pray?" And what did they do?
Sleep.
Went to sleep. And then the one that was always outspoken, and during His trial, when He was accused of knowing Jesus and being a friend of His, what did He do?
Betrayed Him.
And when He was crucified, how many were at the cross? One. And Jesus says, "I don't care if your brother is selfish. I don't care if your brother is inconsiderate. I don't care if your brother lets you down. I don't care if your brother stands and says, 'I never know you. I don't want any part of you.'" In His 3.5 years of ministry, He showed nothing but love and concern for these 12 disciples. Even the one that betrayed Him. Go through the four Gospels and make a study of how Jesus worked with Judas. Many of the things He said to the Pharisees and to some of the people were directed strictly to Judas. And even at the Last Supper, as He washed Judas's feet, can you imagine how kind and loving He was, especially to Judas? And finally He said to him, "One of you is going to betray Me." And then a final appeal to Judas, "Whatever you have to do, go do it quickly. Can't you see, Judas, I know what's going on. I know what you're about to do. Please do not do it." And then the final was, within minutes, After the trial of Jesus, he comes face to face with Peter. He comes face to face with Judas. The same look of love, the same look of sorrow, the same pity. Judas, I know what you're going through. My heart is breaking for you. Peter, I know what you've done. My heart is breaking for you. I love you so much. Peter, when he saw that look, ran to Gethsemane and cried like a baby. And it broke his heart, and he understood what he had done to Jesus. Judas saw that same beautiful look, that same look of Judas, I love you, why? And he went and hung himself. No wonder Jesus says, I'm going to give you a new commandment. Love one another as I have loved you. Yes?
I think also if we look at the law, if you love somebody, you are not going to kill them. You are not going to hate them.
Absolutely.
You are not going to steal from them. So it pretty much covers what the law asks of you just by loving somebody.
Mm-hmm. Okay, absolutely. You see, what I have a question about is the author of the lesson says, and I think he has the 3 points correct. I would just like to reverse a couple of the points. Number one, the law does point out our inadequacies. If that's a word. If it doesn't, it still points it out. Number two, it says that as we look at the law, we cannot keep it. And then number three, we've asked for a higher power. I would like to reverse 2 and 3. I would like to say, as the law points out our condition, if our focus is upon Jesus Christ, the more we see what He is like, the more that we want to become like Him, and then a natural understanding is, as I see Christ and have that relationship, why in the world would I want other gods before me? Because He is enough. Well, I wouldn't even think about bearing false witness against my brother. Wouldn't even think about coveting. Wouldn't even think about not honoring my father and my mother. And I certainly would want the blessing of the seventh day Sabbath, a day that we can come apart from the world and be with family. See, I would like to see the focus on Jesus Christ, not the law. Amen. Does it do away with the law? Absolutely not, because that's what Paul says. Does this abolish the law? Absolutely not. Because you see, I can't love God and then go home and worship an idol tonight. Just can't do it. I can't love God and want to go out and be a hitman tomorrow. Just can't do it. But see, when you focus upon the law, you sit there and you say, now I am not going to covet my neighbor getting that $67,000 car. I'm just not going to covet that. And the next morning you get up and say, you know, him getting that car and me driving this Volkswagen Beetle, I'm not going to covet that. What are you doing? You become focused on it. It becomes part of you. Doesn't work that way. Now, let's go to what Miss Julie said. I always like when the Bible backs up what I say. Man, it makes me feel good. Jesus comes and says, I want to explain the judgment to you. Now, He has everybody's ears. Pharisees are hoping that He brings out a list. Did you or didn't you? In the sales business, we went this last month at Hawk Security. We went for an all-time record of 1,000 sales in 1 month. And at the end of the month, we only had one question. Did we or didn't we? That was it. Because there were no excuses. Well, we did. But there were no excuses. 999 is not 1,000. So see, we had a mark there that at 999 was a failure and 1,000 was victory. And we like that because it was all black and white. Well, sometimes we like a nice checklist. Do we do this? Do we do this? Do we do this? Do we do this? And do we do this? And if that checklist is correct, then we feel real good about ourselves. So Jesus comes along and says, let me tell you what the judgment is going to be like. And He separates the good people on the right, the bad people on the left. And what does He say about the good people?
You clothed me, you helped me, you gave me a drink.
I was naked and you clothed me. I was thirsty and you gave me water. I was hungry and you fed me. I was in prison and you came to see me. What the good people, the righteous people said is absolutely fascinating. Because what did they say when He told them that?
When did we ever do that?
You see, feeding the hungry, visiting the poor, taking care of the ones that are thirsty, taking care of your fellow man was never on the checklist.
Ernie, and I think why they weren't is really significant.
Oh, we're going to get there. Sue, get some tape. You bet it's absolutely important. See? That's exactly. I appreciate her. She's on the right track. It wasn't on their checklist to get to heaven. So now they're confused because they say, when did we do this for you? So what was their motivation?
It was the same love.
Pardon? It was a natural reaction to when you know God and you have that relationship. You do those things simply because this is your brother, this is your sister. You don't do it and wear a yellow, nothing wrong with that. You wear a yellow bracelet around your arm, and when you come into a conflict, you say, I wonder what Jesus would do. Nothing wrong with that if you're an infant and that's what you need to do. But as you mature, as you grow as a Christian, as your relationship is strengthened with Christ, as you walk down that path with Him, as He has His arm around you and you have His arm, your arm around Him, and as you discuss things, you begin to understand, I want to be just like Him, and it becomes part of you, and you do it so naturally that you do not even give it a thought. And then when Christ came and said, you're righteous because you fed, you clothed, and you gave water, they didn't even understand what they were doing because it was a natural consequence of following Christ. Anything you'd like to add?
No.
Well, I just didn't want to miss. And, you know, I miss some of these things.
You know what? I think what I was going to say is that, you know what? We somehow think people should be deserving of our love.
Yes,
and that was
absolutely.
Very much the culture. And what Christ said, it's not just that we do it, but it's who we're doing it for.
Yes.
And I think that that's the point that I think many times we miss, that we're fine helping people that we like.
Oh, that's fun.
Yep.
But you know what? When we're helping people that really, we don't think they really deserve it,
that's
that
right.
they really ought to be doing more than they should, that's what pure religion is.
Yeah, that's what makes it tough. So no wonder Jesus said, let me tell you how you, the new commandment, let me sum all of this up. The way you treat your brother says what you're like. Now, he went to the wicked. Actually, went to them first, but I want to go second. And said to them, I never knew you. We were never friends. We never had a relationship. Because I was hungry, and what happened? I was naked, and what happened? I was thirsty, and what happened? You did nothing. Then the wicked, they say something absolutely good. What did they say?
We bought a VW instead of a 67,000.
That's right.
When did we see you?
If we knew that it was you, we would have acted differently. Well, what in the world is that motivation?
Self,
absolutely. Oh, well, if we knew that was you, we would act different. Stories told that a old farmer and his wife, don't know if he was a farmer, but anyway, he dressed pretty shabbily. He went into, I think it's Arkansas, don't hold me to facts, details are not my deal. It was somewhere. And he went in and they said to the secretary, we'd like to talk to the president of this. We'd like to donate some money to the college, university. And so the secretary went in, told the president, man, there's some weird-looking people out here, and they want to talk to you about a little bit of money. And anyway, the president came out, not impressed, didn't give him the time of day, and said, well, I'll tell you what, why don't you just go ahead and start your own college or do something, but, you know, we're just not interested. And so they got thinking about that, and they said, you know, that's not a bad idea. The guy's last name was Stanford. You ever heard of Stanford University? He was a zillionaire. Misread. That's what Jesus is saying. When you looked at somebody and there was nothing in it for you, you said the heck with them. Oh yes, if you'd known it was me, you would have reacted a little bit different. But you see, get this word, that's out of obligation, not love. So no wonder Paul came along and said, let me sum up what this law is all about. Love fills it all up. That's what fulfill means, fill up. Love fills it all up. Christ came along and said, if you love me, keep my commandments. Well, what's part of his commandments? Love one another. Yes, ma'am.
Is love any different from the law?
Okay, I'll ask you a good question then. What attributes does the law have? As you look at the law, what does the law do for you? Can it caress you? Can it clean you up? Can it put its arm around you? Does it have anger emotion? What emotion does the law have?
It tells you how to get along with your fellow man.
Well, that's part of it. What emotion does the law have?
It also has the righteousness in it.
Pardon?
The law has righteousness. Was the righteousness.
In what way?
In the way that he was looking, there was another that was coming.
Okay. What emotion does the law give you?
Okay. So you're saying that the law is just love without emotion?
Because no, I'm not saying that at all.
It's a list.
If the law is a writing out of God,
see, there's a beautiful.
God is love. How can it be any different?
Because which comes first? What would you do with a statement that my favorite Bible commentator makes, that the angels in heaven were absolutely astonished that there was a need for a law?
But did they make it non-existent?
Out of the love Jesus had for these people, the children of Israel, that He gave them a law. He loved them enough to say, hey, I got to help you guys a little bit. too long in slavery, you don't know the basic principles of love. Yeah. So I'm going to tell you what they are.
Okay. Yeah. What is the law? See? I mean, what we do is nothing wrong with the law, but the law's not the focus. The angels in heaven were amazed that there was a need for law. Please get this point. There was no law in heaven.
You said there was a law to begin with.
Why do you say there was no law in heaven?
There wasn't.
There was no sin.
Was there a principle of law in heaven?
Here's what the law... Who would like to know what the law that Satan broke in heaven? Anybody besides me? Here was the law that was in heaven. Please get this picture. God gave out His love. And the angels received that love, His kindness, His graciousness, and they dwelt upon that, and they in turn gave their love back to God. There was a cycle. It's called a relationship. God said, I showed His love to them, they received it, they bathed in that relationship, and they returned it back to Him. All of a sudden, one day, Lucifer decided that he wasn't going to particularly return that love because jealousy became part of him. And he began to think, why is Christ in on the councils of creation? Why is Christ getting a lot more glory than I am? And so in his heart, which by the way is the element of every sin, in his heart, he began to consider what was best for him rather than God. Ellen White says, that was the law that was broken. It was the law of love not returned.
But he broke all the Ten Commandments, too.
Pardon?
He broke every one of the Ten Commandments, too.
Broke them all. But don't think for a second that there was 10 of them in heaven that the angels got up and looked at every day. Because they said, what's this adultery thing? Thou shalt not kill. What would be the natural question for that? What's that? Please understand, not doing away with the Ten Commandments at all. But my goodness, the Ten Commandments is not the thing that we focus on to get us to heaven. It never was, never is, and never will be. It's the goodness and the graciousness and the kindness of God. Doesn't do away with any of them.
Does it separate?
Pardon?
Does it make a separation?
In what way is that question asked?
It just sounds like the law is over here and the love of God is over here. Don't get distracted by this. Just keep your eyes on that and this will come when they're one.
Well, ask a legalist. Ask the Pharisees.
And I think that's what Christ was saying. He's saying, you're looking at this as if it's something.
That's right.
Let me tell you the exact same thing in a brand new way. Okay. Love your neighbor as yourself. Yeah. It's the same
thing. Which comes first, the chicken or the egg?
Chicken.
Who said chicken?
I did. Chicken was created, the egg was procreated.
I like a man that just speaks for me. Yes, Robbie.
There's a verse in Romans earlier on, and I don't remember exactly where it was, but it says something about what the law that was done away with was the letter of the law, and it's the spirit of the law that remains. And the letter of the law, I believe, is that obligation.
Absolutely.
And the spirit of the law is what is done through love.
Yeah. It's let me sum up. Got 3 minutes, 4 minutes, get out of this mess. Let me sum up. To me, put in simple words, it's what your focus is. If your focus is on the law, you can't command people. You can't command your children, love me or else. Can't do it. You can't command your mate, love me or else. It doesn't work. It won't do that. And so we come along and we say, well, you can't be much of a Christian because you don't keep the right day. Well, I can name you a whole bunch of people that kept the right day, ate the right things, paid the right tithe, and when the Creator of the universe came among them, they did not want a thing to do with Him and they crucified Him. And hurried home so that they could get there before the sun went down so they could keep the Sabbath. So I'm not doing away with the law. The law is a good thing. Pity that God had to take to a bunch of slaves in Egypt and say, don't steal. Don't have another God before me. People are looking for something that touches their heart. We're going through the book of Acts in our Friday night, and we're coming to the conclusion after 8 chapters. Go back and read Acts. What gospel did they take to the people? The story of Jesus. We talked last night about Simon, who was a great person that did all these miraculous things. Philip goes to Samaria. He did not encounter Simon and say, my power to heal is better than your power, or your power is worthless. He did not attack him. He preached the only thing that was important was the love of Christ and the cross of Calvary and who Jesus was. And the people left Simon and went to Philip. Why? He had a message. And that's all that Jesus is saying. As you walk among your fellow brethren, you're going to see people that need touching, healing, spiritual insight. And the bottom line is, if you know me, you'll take care of them. A byproduct of knowing Jesus Christ is, I will never want to put another God in front of Him. I certainly will not take His name in vain. I will not commit adultery. I will not steal. I will not covet. I will not bear false witness. And what a beautiful thought that God gave me a day. Has nothing to take away. It enhances the law. No wonder David said, after he finally got that relationship, I delight to do your law. Because when he was struggling to do it, look at all the things he did. So no wonder Paul said this is the fulfilling of the law. Jesus says, if you really want to know if you're my disciple, has it changed your life enough that you'll take care of your fellow man? Father in heaven, appreciate this class so much. Appreciate our thoughts. Appreciate Paul. But most of all, appreciate the ministry that Jesus came to this earth and demonstrated your law by being who He was, doing what He did, and reaching out to others. In one of His last words on the cross, Father, forgive these people. They have no idea what they're doing. Stephen, as the stones were hitting him, Father, forgive these people. No wonder you said, the essence of our relationship is shown. How do you dwell with your father, with your fellow man? Thank you for this class and this day. In Jesus' name, amen.